Doing it right now.
Seven of us counting.
Yes.
You should be there.
We get a corner, I'll walk over there.
Good afternoon. Today is Wednesday, February 29th. The quorum being present, the Committee on Local Government and Elections will come to order. First bill on the agenda today is Senate File 270, Senator Vandeveer. As a reminder, members, we passed this bill last year, but it was returned to the committee under Rule 47. There is an author's amendment, so we will open the bill for testimony. Senator Vandeveer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I have the A-12 amendment to get the bill in the shape I'd like it in.
Any discussion on A-12? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. Motion prevails. Amendment A-12 is adopted. Senator Vandeveer, you have another amendment as well?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I have the A-13 amendment, and that's a one-word change, just a technical amendment to the previous amendment.
Any discussion on the A-13 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 A little more enthusiasm. All those opposed, say no. Motion prevails. Amendment A-12 is adopted. Senator Vandeveer, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, what this bill is designed to do is provide some protection to property owners who have put together a proposal and believe they comply with current zoning and still maintain local control over how property is used. So this is kind of intended to balance those two competing interests here. So I appreciate your support. And here to explain the need for the bill is Mr. Peter Coyle.
Mr. Coyle.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Peter Coyle. I'm a lawyer lobbyist with Larkin Hoffman, and I represent the Builders Association of the Twin Cities today. The bill was heard through an extensive hearing last year, so I'm not going to go through the bill in its entirety unless you have questions. I do want to identify some changes that have been made since last year's bill, and I should note that these changes have been negotiated extensively with the concurrence, I won't say the support of, but at least the concurrence of the League of Cities, the Association of Counties, and the Minnesota Townships Association. So these are all changes that have been cooperatively negotiated with them to try to improve on the bill. One of the changes that was made over last year was the requirement for what level of vote margin is required to approve a moratorium. Currently, statute is simple majority vote. As introduced, the bill required a supermajority vote. We've stricken the supermajority requirement and left current law. So that's a change over last year, and that was requested by the public agencies as a change that they would support. Secondly, last year, the bill as it was introduced, Senate File 270, essentially created a grandfather for any property owner or business owner who submitted an application that was accepted as complete by the local jurisdiction. And at that point, the legislation would have given them protection in terms of the process going forward in the event that the jurisdiction enacted a moratorium. Over on the House side, there was extensive discussion about whether or not that gave communities enough time to react to something that was genuinely a surprise to them. So one of the changes that we've made, which is reflected in the A-12, is to now establish a clear 60-day window of time following receipt of a complete application, so a total of 75 days, in which the local jurisdiction, county, township, city, can review, react, and if necessary, enact a moratorium to address a use that's just completely surprising to them and that they feel that their regulations are not equipped to manage properly. So that's a fairly significant change in the bill, and yet it's one that the Builders Association is willing to concede. And then lastly, again, at the request of the local jurisdictions, there was concern that existing moratoria that had been enacted by counties along the Mississippi River or, frankly, throughout Minnesota, since this is a statewide bill, there was concern that some of those moratoria may be negatively affected by this bill. And so the A-12 expressly grandfathers any moratoria that is in effect as of the date the bill takes effect. So that if they have a moratorium in effect today, this bill will not affect that moratoria. It would only apply for new moratoria adopted after the effective date, which is August 1st. So those are the primary changes, Mr. Chair. I do have two testifiers with me, if you're willing to take a couple of minutes of testimony from them. And I could turn to them unless there are questions for me at this time.
Are there any questions for Mr. Coyle this time? Okay. Next testifier, Mr. Coyle.
Jason, why don't you come up and Marv?
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jason McCarty. I am a professional engineer in the state of Minnesota. I work for a company called Westwood Professional Services. We work with builders and developers on building new neighborhoods. I'm also the volunteer chair of the Builders Association of the Twin Cities Public Policy Committee. I testified before committee last year when this bill was brought up. I'll be very brief and just talk to the development agreement portion of the bill. Development agreements are important tools for cities and builders and developers on both sides to codify agreements that are made between the two groups. But oftentimes they come at the very end of the approval process, and they're at a point where surprise factors can come into play. And that's why I feel like it's important that through this bill, fees that are collected as a part of a development agreement are items that are related to a project, and that they have a rough proportionality to the work that's completed, and that they're authorized for fees that can be collected by statute. The last portion that I wanted to touch on was the time component that's included. To be able to give just 3 days for a builder developer to be able to review a development agreement before it's brought before city council or county or township board, I think is very important and is just a matter of fairness. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. McCarty.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Marv McDerris. I'm the division president for Pulte Homes of Minnesota. I'm also a member of the board of directors for Builders Association of the Twin Cities. Thank you for listening to our comments today. The portion of the bill that I wanted to address was the temporary moratorium, and talk about the importance of that provision as it relates to companies like mine that I run. Pulte Homes is one of the largest residential home builders in the state of Minnesota, also one of the largest residential developers. To give you some perspective, last year we built, sold, and closed about 240 homes in Minnesota, primarily in the Twin Cities, and developed about that many residential home sites. This is a very important provision as we, you know, as our economy moves forward in Minnesota, and obviously housing is an important part of getting our economy back on the road to recovery here. Within the Twin Cities, we employ 45 people directly and several hundred trade partners. The moratorium, looking at the provision of the bill and addressing some of those concerns, the reason why that's important is as we start to recover and invest more money in development, building new communities. There's a lot of time and money spent in due diligence when we look at new projects. It all starts with meeting with the surrounding property owners and the owners of property and working with municipalities to come up with site plans, engineering sites, doing environmental work, all the other due diligence work. It can take up to a year to do that type of work. To give you an example, last year we developed several sites, and we would spend, in between $200,000-$300,000, even in today's economy, doing our due diligence work. So to get to a situation where we have a complete application submitted to a municipality, and then the possibility of having a temporary moratorium put on that application after all that due diligence work had been done, is very damaging, obviously. There's a financial toll. There's a time toll. And it makes I'm part of a large company, Pulte Homes, which is one of the largest home builders in the country. And certainly our investment in markets around the country we assess risk, and that's one of the risks that we have to assess when we look at investing money in Minnesota. You know, is there exposure that we could invest time and money and then be put on hold? It's particularly damaging in Minnesota because of the weather constraints. There's a small window of time in the spring and summer when you can develop property, and so a moratorium that comes on at the wrong time of year could delay you, even though it might be a short time period, it can delay the project for over a year because of weather conditions. So I appreciate your consideration and listening to my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McDavis. Are there any questions for Senator Kelash?
Mr. McDavis, one of the things that not having a moratorium, so if Pulte decides to build a development in a location and the property next door, the farmer in this, there was a story about this, decides he's going to put in his hog operation there, would you like to make sure that the county or the city can't do that moratorium on his property as well? Because that's kind of what we're, this is a double-edged sword, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think
what's good for you is also good for him, right? So, I mean, I'm being a little bit of devil's advocate and maybe worst case scenario, but you're eliminating the city's ability to keep that from happening and ruining your investment.
I agree. I mean, one thing that we always look at, part of our due diligence process is looking at surrounding uses and what the possibilities are. We certainly want to work within the framework of the existing zoning, and so we consider those things when we have an application, and we know that there's risks there. I think the important provision of the bill is, you know, when we've already gone through the due diligence process and worked with the municipalities and surrounding property owners, we want we've already submitted a complete application. The thing that we want to avoid is having that application tabled by a temporary moratorium. So I certainly understand. It's a great point. I understand both sides.
It can work. I mean,
absolutely.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kelash, I wanted to make sure you understand that the bill, the A-12 amendment, does not alter in any respect the ability of a city or a county or a township to enact a moratorium virtually at any time. Nothing is changing about that. The only procedural change is that they would need to give notice and have a hearing on the moratorium ordinance before it's enacted. The only change that this bill affects is that if an application for Mr. McDerris's company, for example, is on file with the city and being reviewed, once it gets past 75 days of being in the pipeline, that moratorium can't stop that project, but that's it. The city can still, or the county or the township, they can still adopt a moratorium virtually at will. They could do it tomorrow if they chose. So I want to make sure you understand that authority is not being diminished.
Thank you. Can I follow up, Mr.
Sure.
Yeah, Mr. Coates. Well, so if that project is in the file for 75 days, alterations to that file that changes some of the nature of the project being proposed, does that start the 75-day process over again?
Mr. Chair,
We could put it in and then do an amendment to the project that's right. Not acceptable, and the city would or county, whatever, would have no ability to establish a moratorium, right?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kelash, thank you for the reminder of one other change we made to the bill from last year.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, the bill allowed the applicant to resubmit without being bound. We've taken that provision out of the bill. So if the city does say, you know, you've made a change that's an important change, we don't like it, then the clock starts over. They've got to resubmit. And if they have a moratorium enacted by that point, then they're stuck.
So if I may, so if I understand this correctly, Senator Vandeveer, Mr. Coyle, is that the company does its due diligence, get the application, everything's done, that moving forward, if the city or township then comes up and has a problem, there's a due process procedure. They can still implement a moratorium. They just have to do it within a total of 75 days or 60 days and then have a public hearing and have a simple majority vote to put in place a moratorium, correct?
That's correct, but I want to just be clear, Mr. Chair. Even as to projects that have not been filed with an application, those are a subject to the moratorium immediately. They don't need a 60-day window of time for them. that 60-day window only applies for the person who's invested money, bought land, hired engineers, and potentially spent thousands of dollars. They're the only ones that we're trying to protect in this process because they, by definition, are trying to rely on the code as it exists today. And somebody has decided that they maybe should change the code. That's the balance we're trying to strike.
Thank you, Mr. Coyle. Are there any more questions for Mr. McDaris or Mr. McCarty? Senator Eaton?
The question I have is, why would a city then accept an application without having the information, the study, and all that ahead of time? I mean, to me, it would just back it all up. I mean, there's a way around this, but to me, that's the loophole. So not accept the application until you have all the information.
Mr. Chair, Senator, it's not really a loophole. The city is entitled currently under law to define through code what you have to give them. They get to define the nature of the application, and they get to determine whether or not you've given them everything that they're required to have. Only at that point is the application deemed complete. If they feel like you haven't given them adequate information about traffic or noise or lighting or wetland protections, they can reject the application out of hand and tell you to go away until you have all the information provided for them. So they're in control of that process.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have another testifier, Mr. Bagel?
No.
We don't have him here?
I think our testimony is complete as to the bill, Senator.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Coyle. Opposition testimony. Mr. Mosler? I was also advised that his testimony is also in your packets. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Mosler. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Gunther Mosler. I am the chair of the Randolph Township Planning and Zoning Commission in Dakota County. I'm addressing the concerns we have regarding Senate File 270. If passed, even in the compromise form, it diminishes our ability to properly act an interim ordinance. Every local government unit should have the right and reasonable time to review any unanticipated proposals for any use, development, or subdivision not covered under the existing ordinance. I think the timelines for townships are really weakened by putting a time frame on it because many of the townships do not have staff, or even small cities have staff to do the proper study of a application, and probably have to get somebody, hire somebody to do that work for them. You also have newspapers that only publish once a week rather than daily. So we can make the announcements for public meetings and input. The Randolph Township ordinance was just updated November 2011 and is intended to protect the property rights of every resident and landowner equally. Minimum restrictions are chosen to ensure that use, development, or subdivision will be compatible with the existing ordinance and will not be detrimental either affect to health, safety, convenience or general welfare, or property values of another resident or landowner. I just heard the developers say they spend large amounts of money planning the projects and to deserve those investments be protected. We agree with that, but also part of project planning, there should be and it should include communications with the local governing unit in which the project is planned. Unanticipated applications for projects are addressed in the current ordinance, may be perceived to be a hidden agenda, and would create a lot of skepticism about the integrity of the proposal. Townships and some cities do not have the resources, like I said earlier, to collect that information and properly inform all the public citizens that live in that particular governing unit. The LGU may require expertise, like I said earlier, and therefore the 30-day has been changed to 60 to 75. I don't know what the right day is, but I would think proper work with the contractors or developers and either a contractor that you have to hire to review the information would be the better choice. A shortened timeline may be detrimental to both the developer and the citizens of the township or the county. Decisions should be made in a timely manner, and they must be based on accurate information and not perception of benefit or harm. The proposed legislation, SF-270, was discussed in a monthly meeting at a township board meeting and planning and zoning members this last month, and it was unanimously agreed, and the township board members were aware that the township residents want and need much better than any, or they know their needs better than anybody probably in here, unless you're a part of one of those local governing units. Every resident in a township must and should be informed via the public notices and meetings of unanticipated proposals to be able to voice your input. The Randolph Township Board and the Planning Zoning Commission approved this testimony in the February 21st meeting this year and requests that this legislation not be passed.
Thank you, Mr. Moser. Are there any questions? Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Mosler, I was just curious on the communication piece that you mentioned. My understanding is that this particular the provisions in this bill would only kick in after a permit has been filed. And so I want to – are you saying that 75 days isn't enough time to get the communication out? I'm not sure what your concern is on the communication and the timeline. If you could explain that further, please.
Mr. Chair and
Mr. Mosler,
in reply to your answer, in some cases 75 days wouldn't be a problem, depending what the project is and so forth. There is a lot of things that come up nowadays that people never even thought about, but the people that are planning those projects, they knew what they were going to do and where they wanted to do it, but communications is not a strong point either from the developers or if any of the state agencies that may have to rule or license or permit the project that they're talking about, they don't communicate with the local unit itself. So consequently, 75 days may be good, 75 may not be, but you can't put a timeline on it is what we're asking for.
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Mosler. How would you recommend solving that community? So you're saying there's a communication gap between some of the state agencies.
Senator Nelson?
I knew who you meant, Mr. Chair. That's all right. The Carla and the Nelson get combined once in a while. That's okay. But Mr. Mosler, what I was wondering about was I think what you're identifying isn't maybe so much an issue with this bill, but maybe an issue with the way that state agencies communicate with townships. Is that what I hear you saying?
There may be cases where the state agencies know what a contractor or developer has planned because of some inquiries that they have received, but we would not know about that in a local governing unit, and we should have some idea if something is planned in our own, whether township, city, or whatever.
Mr. Chair, just a follow-up.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Oh, Mr. Mosler, I agree with you that communication is so important, and I would be glad to work with you if there's, I don't know if it would be something that would need to be a legislative mandate, but I think what you're saying is the state agencies need to communicate with the township. So the 75 days isn't the problem. The problem is you're not getting the information from the state agencies.
Correct.
Thank you.
Just an example. Just recently, last meeting, We had a company that is planning to move into an industrial park that we have. It's a new process. It is unannounced yet, but they at least approached the township and said, we're interested in buying land there, and here's what we want to do. We don't have a completely developed plan yet, but we'd like to give you some notice so you can start thinking about this. What more do you want to ask for, you know? That's great. But to have somebody just come in and say, I'm going to... And right now, I guess the big subject is silica sand mines, but it could be any number of things that are... Technology changes so fast. It could be a chemical plant of some kind or any number of things. So little communications is really great, and it would certainly help the timeline situation.
Senator Sieben?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, sir, could you comment on, it seems to be that if you're submitting an application to the governing body and then the clock starts ticking at that point, at the point at which you submit the application, that's not necessarily the point, though, at which the public is notified or perhaps all different levels of government. In this case, as you were mentioning, the state agencies necessarily know of the project or are able to. I'm just curious, I guess, what your interpretation is of a governing body adopts an interim ordinance within 75 days following receipt. That's obviously following receipt to the township, I would assume, or to the county, and that would seem to be where there's some confusion.
Smaller units of government meet once a month. And if a contractor, let's say our township meets, the board meets on the third Tuesday of the month, the Planning Commission meets the first Tuesday of the month. Any applications for building or whatever permits they have that the Planning Commission would handle would be reviewing those and then handing off with their recommendation to the Township Board. But if somebody comes in and presents a project and brings it in the first of the month, well, the Township Board doesn't meet till the third Tuesday of the month. So you've lost all those days without anybody being able to act on it.
So could I...
Senator Sieben?
Mr. Chair, thank you. There's then a real difference between following receipt, where you could, the developer in this case, could submit the application to the township. That's a real difference between the date they received it versus the date of the first public hearing or any sort of public notice that takes place. Is that, do you agree with that?
Mr. Mosler?
I don't know what you're...
I'm asking if... I guess I'm kind of answering my own question. There seems to be a really distinct difference between following receipt of an application versus if the language would be changed to say the clock, the 75 days would start at the instance of the first public meeting.
Mr. Mosler?
Well, in order to have the public meeting, the township has to have the documentation in their hands so they can post it in a newspaper before they have the meeting. There's a time frame involved. It could be a week. It could be 2 weeks. So, you know, the time schedule changes very easily when you don't have a full-time governing unit 5 days a week or newspapers that print every day and those kind of things. So you have to take the small governing units that could be impacted by any big project. And communications up front would certainly help cut that off.
Thank you, Mr. Coyle.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I could respond on two fronts. First of all, the intent is to give the local unit of government, city, township, or county, a clearly defined 60-day window after they have determined that the application is complete and compliant. So remember, in response to the question from Senator Eaton, the local jurisdiction is in control of when that application is acceptable to them for being formally reviewed. Mm-hmm. If it's not acceptable, the clock never starts. So that's point one. Point two, just one small war story, and it was expensive. We represented a northern school district in building a school building about a year ago. We went through about a year and a half very public process opposed by the local township because they did not have zoning authority. But it included an EAW. It included probably four public hearings, all of which the township participated in. And when the county approved the project at the end of that process, and they had the authority to approve it, The township at that last date decided to enact a development moratorium to try to block the project. Those are the kinds of situations where you have folks who are trying to play by the rules, are trying to act in good faith, have done everything that they've been asked to do, and yet they're being asked to take the responsibility of a jurisdiction that at the very last minute, perhaps for political reasons, perhaps for other policy reasons, that just decides they don't like the project. And so this bill is trying to strike a balance between saying you can still have the authority, you still have a total period of 75 days in which to evaluate an application. If you think something is not right about your code, you can still adopt the moratorium. But there's a point in time where the rights of the property owner, the business owner, ought to be protected at least enough so that they can get a vote. They're not guaranteed an approval. They still may be denied. They may not have appropriate information to satisfy traffic concerns. If that's the case, they could still be denied. So this doesn't guarantee any kind of a positive outcome for them at the end of the day.
Senator Kielash.
Yeah, Mr. Coles, for the example you just gave, it seems to me like you're talking about the developer was applying for a permit through the county instead of through the township. So, you know, we have competing levels of government here doing that. So did the developer go to the right government unit in order to get approval? And then, you know, and was the township out of line in the end because they didn't really have the jurisdiction over that project? I'm a little confused because
sure.
That's not necessarily dealing with the moratorium. It's just who is the proper local unit of government that's supposed to be able to either apply the moratorium or approve the project, and shouldn't they be the same?
Mr. Chair, Senator, great
Mr.
question. The county was the authority that was responsible for reviewing and approving the project. In fact, the township in question did not have any zoning regulations, and I presume they preferred it that way for some reason. But once the project was approved, this was after it was approved by the county, all that was left was issuance of the building permit. It was only at that point that the township decided that it needed to try to stop the project if it could, because it just didn't want to see the school building built.
Mr. Chair, follow-up. So it seems like that's a little bit different problem than that the local township shouldn't have had the authority if they weren't the permitting body, I would think, to put in place the moratorium. But that may be a different problem for jurisdictional, who's in charge jurisdictionally. But one of the other follow-up questions I have, and that is that sometimes withholding permits or having a moratorium may be an opportunity so that the local jurisdiction has a little more control over the project, say design considerations of the project. We want a more historical a building that's more historically designed to fit the neighborhood, whatever it is that it might be, and the moratorium gives them an opportunity for negotiation purposes. And I'm not sure that, you know, if a developer can delay that for 75 days, can it just keep from having to make changes that the community might want. Could you just address that kind of concerns?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, that's actually a different issue, not really a moratorium issue. If a community adopts a moratorium, they can't touch the application that's before them.
Okay.
They're statutorily prohibited. The only thing they are allowed to do is reconsider whether they want to change their zoning, change their comprehensive plan, or adopt any new controls that will give them more control over any project. But that application that's pending there, that application is dead until that moratorium comes off. By then, the market may have changed. You may have lost your purchase agreement. Financing issues may have arisen that jeopardized the project. So the world could have changed in 12 months.
Senator
Kielash, we'll take one more question from Senator Kielash. We have three more. Yep. Testifiers, and then we'll move
on.
So
to follow up, this does not affect the community's ability to negotiate with the developer over that kind of issue. And thank you for that.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you. We'll move on to Mr. Gary Wordish. Gary Wordish. Okay, he's behind the podium. Okay. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you. Gary Wordish, I'm Vice President of the Minnesota Farmers Union, a farm out in western Minnesota in Renville County. Farmer membership, we strongly...
Excuse me, Mr. Wordish. I forgot to mention, we want to try to keep the We have you and then two other testifiers, so we want to try to keep it to 5-minute testimony at the most so we can get a couple questions in and make sure we get through this. We have two other bills to hear today as well.
That's fine.
Thank you, Mr. Ward.
I was just going to say our membership, we strongly support, you know, local control at the local level, and it could give you – I'm also a county a township supervisor. Been a township supervisor for longer than I can remember. But anyway, I can give you a little brief happening in our township. One weekend, all of a sudden, we had about a 2-acre building site that had previously changed ownership. Ownership was new to the community. They bought that and they lived in town. And all of a sudden, over the weekend, there was about a dozen trailer homes showed up on this 1-acre building site. Not in very good shape, you know, pretty, you know, not very good quality trailer homes. So our township board, we went over and met with the owner and asked him what his plans were for all these trailer homes on this acreage. He didn't have a plan. His plan was just to rent them out. We're in western Minnesota. At that time, we had a lot of migrant labor working in the neighborhood. Just giving you an example of what can come up.
So one moment. Just a minor administrative issue is... There you go.
Okay, I'm sorry. Hey.
Thank you.
Sorry about that. Didn't realize all the rules of hanging onto the mic, but okay. Anyway, this is just an example, and maybe this is different, but it just points out to things, unforeseen things can happen. Anyway, this particular owner, new to the community, he didn't have a plan for these trailer homes other than renting them out, taking advantage of a workforce that would have been willing to pay him rent and live in unhealthy conditions. He didn't have a plan for water. He didn't have a plan for sewer. Didn't have a plan for a storm. We've had tornadoes yesterday. There was a number of tornadoes went through Kansas. No plans at all. So we met and we passed an interim ordinance. Had a special meeting and passed that. Then we consulted our township attorneys. I don't remember exactly, but I know we met and did the interim ordinance immediately. And we informed him of what we were going to do. Then I believe, you know, later at the appropriate time, we had our public notice and a public meeting and worked on the ordinance. But see, this is an unforeseen problem. The county, he didn't have to even submit an application. There wasn't any, the county didn't even have anything pertaining to this particular issue. In the meantime, then, he went away and the county developed a plan for that situation, you know, appropriate number of homes on a different on acreage, different requirements, stuff like that. So it just shows you what can happen. We're all sitting here today. You point out to a few different issues. You know, the builders are pointing out to their concern. But my experience as a town board officer, you know, as long as there's any communication, I agree with Gunter's testimony previously. As long as the communication between the builders, I can't imagine a builder spending, you know, that amount of money without them having some communication beforehand, knowing that they're going to get approval on the project. As a township officer, we take our jobs very seriously. We can't just pass an ordinance just because we don't like the car that the fellow is driving or the way he combs his hair. We can't do that. Sure, you can wait till the last day and pass something and stall it off, but you don't have very good legal grounds to doing that. So they can be very easily stricken down. So I guess as a farmers union organization, we would, there's greater Minnesota is a lot differently than some of the urban centers, and the issues are completely different. You're trying a legislation, one size fits all, and we can't solve all problems with legislation. Communication is still the best thing, and I guess as an organization, we would oppose this legislation.
Thank you, Mr.
The current law seems to be working quite well, and we just see no reason to change it.
Thank you, Mr. Wardich. I just do have one question, though. This bill, the way it's written now, so given your scenario, you see that stuff happening, don't like it, you didn't have a plan for it at that time, so this what this bill would say is, okay, you can still do that. If you don't like it, you just call a hearing and have a vote and a simple majority. The town board could say, we got to stop this and put a halt to it, and then we'll develop our plan and go from there. So, I mean, under this bill, you could still do that, right? You just wouldn't. You just have to have a hearing and have an official vote.
Well, timeline. You know, at the townships, we're very limited budgets. As Gunter said, you know, we meet once a month. Most townships don't even have planning board or zoning authority. We haven't. You know, we've in the rural areas of the country, we defer that to the county.
Yep.
you still are going to run into trouble at the time of the clock and, you know, public notice. We have a weekly newspaper, so you could have 30 days go by easily before you even got a public notice out there. And it just, you know, the current law seems to be working. I guess it just appears to be a job or a way to weaken the current law. And usually when my experience is when something is too good that you can't pass up on, you know, you just got to do it right now. Usually it doesn't work out in our favor. It's best to take a little time and go a little slower on these projects, and I would hope builders are having problems in some areas who do the same thing.
Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think, though, the example that was given about the trailer homes, and it's disappointing to me that a community would not address that in advance, because it's a housing issue that isn't mm-hmm. uncommon in a rural area. But there is an exemption in here. If the proposed use is deemed by the governing body to constitute a nuisance as defined by Section 56, 561.01, and also I would think that the health department might have something to say about it too, because they do have standards for housing, and if the trailers really were in poor condition and basically shouldn't be inhabited, that they could come in and shut that down as well. But I think we may have covered it for circumstances like that, which would be perhaps a health and safety risk.
Thank you. All right. No other questions for Mr. Wordish? If not, then we will ask, is it Kristen Tollefson? Kristen Tollefson? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Wordish.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the
record.
Thank
you. I'm Kristen Idy Tollefson, and I'm a planning commissioner down in Florence Township, Goodhue County, the center of the silica sand mining challenge. I've been following this bill, and I appreciate the work that has been done on the bill, and particularly the grandfathering of existing moratoriums. We are facing a very challenging moratorium study down in Goodhue on the first silica sand mine potential proposals in the Hiawatha Valley. And I think one of the continuing problems with this bill for me is the phrase a use that really does open up. I can understand, and as a planning commissioner, I'm concerned about a fair playing field for builders. That's one of our charges. And that's one of the ways we actually use moratorium in Florence Township. If we have something that is unclear and we don't think we can provide an even playing field for property owners and developers, that is one of the few times that we've used those. But this general phrase, a use, is so open and so broad that there are very, very major things that can come up. And they can. For instance, in Goodhue, I think we are going to need more than a year to finish our consulting, our reports, for the moratorium. It is, I think, one of the really important things is that this isn't really an even playing field in terms of the rights and responsibilities. I understand the responsibilities that developers have to their investors, but then, of course, there are the investments of the existing residents, which might be decades, which investments in their property and communities. And there's also the fact that a local government is responsible for the health, welfare, and safety of the whole community. And that's a very different charge. And so it's really, in the balance of the playing field, that's a very important dimension. When we have to assess risks, they can be very broad, as in the silica sand mining issue. I do appreciate the comments regarding the timelines. I thought that was really very, actually it did meet my experience. And also this point about negotiation, I think, is important. For instance, in our town, in our county, we will be uncovering all sorts of facts and dimensions of the potential impacts of silica sand mining for the county and the townships. And it will, in fact, be the fact that we have been able to have a moratorium and study that and bring these issues to light that will, in fact, give grounds for negotiating, which is And so, and because, again, of this type of unexpected use, industrial silica sand mining, the whole question, the other piece of the bill that I'm concerned about is the parameters that are being created for the development agreement and the fiscal responsibilities. This makes perfect sense from the perspective of builders, you know, of subdivisions. We all have something in either a county, city, or township that deals with building and subdivisions. But we don't have things in place that deal with large unexpected uses like silica sand mining. And so, for instance, in Goodhue County, one of the major tools that our zoning administrators and our staff are looking to is a development contract, a development agreement that might be able to cover some of these things that we studied during the moratorium. And also the fiscal responsibility is not proportionate. It's not a simple equation because we're talking about remediating bluffs. We're talking about restoring blufflands, which will probably require some kind of escrow. So again, when we broaden this this bill to a use, I don't know what the clear meaning of development is. I understand what subdivision is. But when we broaden it to a use, that really does create vulnerabilities in outstate Minnesota that I would ask you to take a much closer look at. I think that that finishes my comments. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. You were finished?
Sure.
Oh, okay. I didn't want to preempt you, but yep. You finished. Senator Limmer, you had a question?
Yes. ma'am, you were talking that sometimes the word use may be too open or too broad, but then you shifted into that maybe being a justification for an observation that you claim in some cases there may one may need a year to study something or even longer time, but or talk about establishing parameters of construction and subdivision. But don't you do that when you issue the preliminary permit anyway?
Isn't
that,
Chair.
Isn't that the job of any governing authority and not to change the rules for the developer in the midst of his development?
Ms. Tollefson?
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, I think this speaks to an issue that was raised by several of the other township officials, and that is that as a township, we might not have permitting authority, and we particularly don't necessarily process an application. And so that does create kind of a strange situation. Yet we're the impacted landowners and we're the impacted community, but we're not necessarily processing the permit or the application. The county is. Does that make sense?
Well, the question comes up about process then.
Mm-hmm.
The county is making a decision. They're asked to make a decision to create a permit.
Mm-hmm.
There's public notice. I'm sure they're contacting a township. Doesn't the township have a time to respond, to react to the pending decision of a county? And why aren't they bringing these questions up before the county issues the permit in the first place? Why are they now? I don't understand how the system works if you're not taking advantage of the public notice, and I'm sure the public notice that is contacting from the county to the township, why you aren't reacting and considering studies or parameters of construction at that time, not after the fact. I think that's the real question of the whole bill.
Ms.
Tollefson. So why are we missing something here?
Ms. Tollefson?
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, we have been negotiating with our county for like 5 years, trying to line up some of these pieces. And a lot of it does have to do with that difference between the, you know, the fact that townships don't have staff. We don't have somebody watching these things. We don't always have somebody at the county meetings because our three-man supervisors are so overextended and most of our planning commission members are small business owners. And so we don't have staff to follow these things and anticipate them. We are a very proactive township. We happen to have a lot of pieces in place, including a comprehensive plan. And it's still very, we it's very difficult for us to do that kind of coordination when we meet once a month. Our newspaper only comes out once a week, and we might not know anything if the clerk who received something from the county doesn't happen to mention it to the, you know, planning commission. So we depend a lot upon just the ability of, and that's why it's so important when proposers are forthcoming, because we depend a lot upon hearing what's going on. If the proposers don't let the township know and go straight to the county, it can take some time for that all to get to the county or to the township.
Thank you, Ms. Tolleson.
I'm sorry. It's so confusing. It really is. It truly is.
One last question from Senator Seeb, and then we'll move on to the next testifier.
Mr. Chair, it's actually not a question. I'd like to request a roll call vote on the bill, please.
Yeah. Roll call has been requested. Thank you, Ms. Tolleson.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Thank you, committee.
Ewalls? P.D. Ewalls? Welcome to the committee, Mr. Mayor. Please state your name for the record.
Okay, my name is Pete Ewalls. I am the mayor of the city of Jordan in Scott County. And please forgive me, but I've had a cold, and I'm kind of hearing impaired at the moment. So if you have questions, I might have to ask a few times just to get it across.
We won't have any questions.
All right. First thing I have is I have one city council member that asked me to basically read a letter, so I'll read that quick, and then I'll kind of cover the points. This is from Tom Boncher, who is on the city council for the city of Jordan. Good afternoon, honorable senators. I am Tom Boncher, resident of Jordan, Minnesota, and Scott County. I regret that health considerations prevent me from delivering this testimony in person. Because I believe that local government is the most responsive government, I have worked hard for 5 years to become a member of the Jordan City Council. The headlong rush by the state legislature to place corporate privilege before the well-being of the people of Minnesota is truly disturbing to me. If SF 270 passes, no property owner will be secure in his rights, since the bill makes it all but impossible for anyone to effectively contest corporate assaults on local zoning ordinances. The effect will be to put people at the mercy of corporations. This bill will undermine the ability of local governments to take care of their constituencies. The City of Jordan and Scott County can and rightly should be held responsible for the well-being of their local constituents. I don't think we need or want state government telling us what our right for our constituencies are. Therefore, I encourage you to reject this bill and support local government. Thank you. That was from Tom Boncher.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just as a note, again, I just want to emphasize that the bill offers, gives the townships and the local cities the ability to call a hearing, have a quick meeting, simple majority, to impose a moratorium. It strikes a balance between gives due process. It strikes a balance between the city's needs, the township's needs, and as we've heard before, the other examples, developers and others who have already had, they've already went through the due process and been given applications. As Senator Roebling pointed out, there's a clause in here that talks about nuisances and other issues that help you out as well. So I must say that the language assault, undermining, inability to take care of its citizens is in my humble opinion, a bit overstated, but be that as it may, continue with your comments.
Okay. Well, just from my own experiences, what has happened, I'm fairly new to the political game. I became mayor 3 years ago, so I'm on my fourth term. But essentially, it became a trial by fire. And when you get in there, one of the things that I'm listening to you guys talk about the timeline, but nowhere in there is there a provision that requires staff to notify the public officials that this is coming down the pike. Now, my own experience has been I had a development request where basically 30 days of the timeline was gone before I even knew about it because staff had approved it. There was no notification of public officials. So even in the current form, I have issues with that because the timeline has already shifted forward. And with the recent change in the laws last year where essentially you've eliminated the planning commission as part of the planning, it's not required for a hearing. It can go to the city council. We have a planning commission that meets once a month. And so generally what happened in this case actually was the application got approved right after the planning commission met. So you're able to burn up a lot of time on the clock, which is exactly what developers want to do if they have something that they don't want people to rally around. So what you do is you figure out how to burn the clock up and then try to run it through very, very quickly.
Just a quick question.
Yeah.
Could you not adjust your process to make sure that they don't do that?
That's a process issue. What I'm saying here is you're holding me responsible, but staff isn't held responsible to this. You know, when I look at...
I'm sorry, Mr. Mayor, but with all due respect, you are the mayor, so you're in charge of your staff, and you could change the process, right, to help accommodate for that. We don't want to take away the city and the township's authority to do this. We really don't. I mean, that's not the point of this bill. We're trying to strike a balance to make sure that city planners, the local elected officials, and the developers, whoever they might be, have that balance. But anyway, please continue.
Well, the other thing I wanted to add is on the 3 years that I've been mayor, 99% of all the applications that we've had come across the city council have been approved. So when I look at this bill, I look at it as a solution in search of a problem. There isn't a problem. And I'm going to agree with the with some of the townships is the cities aren't staffed like state government is. We don't have all the facilities available to research every possible scenario that can come down the pike. So when we write our ordinances, they're written and based on what our experiences are. So if somebody comes with something totally new and different, and I'm being told I have to approve it because they already made the application and it's complete, I'm kind of stuck. I'm sitting here in the middle going, I got to approve something that I don't even have a provision in my ordinance for, but I should have known about it in advance. Everything changes so much that you can't possibly have any idea what's going to come down the pike. So you write them on your experiences. We pass ordinances that literally we changed them 15 minutes after we passed them because a developer came in and wanted to make some changes. I think most of the city governments are very responsive to the needs of the developers.
I agree. Are there, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Questions for the mayor? Senator Kelesh.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think many municipalities are using language coming out of the League of Cities or something like that to help with their ordinances and things like that. One of the things that may be a consequence of this passing this bill would be that the ordinances and the municipalities would start tightening up all their ordinances, making it much more difficult for developers to find a loophole or even be creative in this process because the city's trying to protect themselves. And, you know, they can always amend their rules to say this is permitted after the fact, but if it's not permitted ahead of time, they have got themselves covered. So wanted and unwanted developments no longer look feasible under the plan that the city developed just to avoid the bad ones. So is that something that...
Well, see, what I look at is you can't possibly imagine all the different scenarios that are going to come across. So when you get an application, then basically I'm told that we're going to have to approve it. And then essentially what's going to happen is we have to come across with some kind of a nuisance reason or a legal reason rather than going back and updating our ordinances to make sure that they're correct, which is the process that is currently state laws, that we upgrade our ordinances before we approve a change like that.
Thank you. We have, I think, Senator McGuire, one more question, and we'll move on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Mayor, we've heard from several people here that they don't want to take away the local control, and I was just going to ask you if you feel like this bill is taking away your local control, because we've heard that the intent is not to take it away. So
I definitely feel that it's taken away from local control. And I would just add that we've worked with the county, and generally the notice, you know, when you get the notices for impending changes, I think it came up earlier, and why aren't you working with the counties? Quite often what happens is the issue becomes a holding pattern. So you're sitting there holding, waiting for something to happen, and then also all of a sudden, bingo, something hits your desk, and then you've got about 2 weeks to respond. Well, you know, the thing is, we could call special meetings every time this goes on, but, you know, really, we're just private people working full-time jobs, and then we're trying to do something good for the citizens. So if I called a special meeting every time, I don't think we'd get anybody running for office because we couldn't keep up with it. So we wait for the next meeting, which gives us almost no time to react to what the developers are working on.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We're going to move on. We have one more testifier, Robert Schroeder. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, for your time.
All right. I want to thank you for your time.
Thank you. Mr. Schroeder?
Good afternoon, welcome. Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Please state your name for the record. And again, we have maybe 4 minutes so we can
I'll be brief.
Get the other bills up. Thank you.
My name is Robert Schroeder. I am a large property owner in Goodhue County. I'm not in any local government unit. I'm just a landowner. Let me make my comments brief, and first, let me let you know that I'm also a doctor of engineering, civil and environmental engineering, to acknowledge the guys from Pulte. The developers, the housing developers, I don't find as a landowner to be an issue here. It's pretty hard for a housing developer to go out and do things stealth-wise. They need to be looking at sewer and water. There's a lot of things that give them visibility that local governments are going to be aware of. My greatest concern, and it's been brought up here already, is frac sand mining. This has been a stealth issue for us in southeastern Minnesota. And it's stealth because, frankly, the mining companies wisely went in, evaluated the laws that we had on our books, and then struck. And they didn't strike with a lot of visibility. They slipped in. They looked at how gravel pits were being managed. They looked at what they needed to do. And then they started buying land. Quite frankly, our community has had an impossible time of keeping ahead of the curve. Whether it's Goodhue County, whether it's Florence Township, we're always seeming to be catching up with these, all of a sudden, oh my God, look what's happening to us issues. We've had it before with hog operations. Thank you, Senator Gaylish, for bringing that up. We had it with cell towers, where all of a sudden, a beautiful bluff country is now being pockmarked with cell towers that could have been developed a different way through better engineering. And we're now seeing it with frac sand mining. I don't want to be critical of housing developers, and I'm not. And I'm not critical of them in the Twin Cities. Frankly, I'm not even critical of them about state. The issue is these other challenges that we face that don't have the visibility, and then all of a sudden, boom, the communities are faced with it. Again, that doesn't happen with housing. Two last comments, if you will. I'm concerned that, maybe this is my last comment. I'm concerned that the mining people will be slipping in under the cloak of the housing developers and under the property developers. I'm very concerned with that. If there was some way to bifurcate housing and property development versus mining and open pit mining and derivations on that, as a property owner, and I'd feel pretty good about that. I understand their needs from a developer standpoint, but I have to tell you, the stealthiness of allowing mining companies to slide through under the cloak of a housing developer's rightful demands, that just doesn't work. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Schroeder. Senator McGuire, we'll take Senator McGuire. We have one more testifier.
Oh, okay. Great.
They keep
while they're coming forward, I maybe just want to ask Councilor a question about do we have different rules for commercial versus industrial? Like we tend to do that, I think, in statute and city ordinance. Do we have different rules for that, and does this bill address anything like that?
Mr. Chair, Senator McGuire, this bill does not create any distinction between commercial, residential, industrial, anything like that.
And so if I could just follow up, so is in city, do city ordinances sometimes do that, though? Do they, I'm not asking you to comment on all cities, but I'm guessing that cities do make distinctions between commercial and residential.
Ms. Dangle?
Mr. Chair, Senator McGuire, yes, a lot of times they do zone in those different districts.
They do different zoning. So it would be feasible that perhaps we could make some distinctions on bills like this in those two areas. I mean, it's possible, I guess.
Mr. Chair and Senator McGuire, yes, I imagine it would be possible.
Just curious. I'll wait. Mr. Chair, thank you. I'll wait till we have another testimony. Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you, Ms. Schroeder. One last final testifier, Mr. King, Bobby King. Now we're down to 3 minutes, Mr. King.
Okay.
Sorry.
That's all right. Welcome
to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Bobby King. I'm representing the Land Stewardship Project. We're opposed to this legislation because we believe local governments need to be fully empowered to respond to citizen concern when unexpected and potentially harmful developments are proposed. And it's been touched on before, but local units of government can't be expected to anticipate all potential future uses. And when do you learn that your ordinances fall short is often when this unexpected proposal, unanticipated proposal happens. Like the sand frack mining. Ordinances didn't anticipate it because it was a use that didn't exist. And they had no reason to think it would come to the area until it did. And we just heard it came in a way where they tried to take advantage of loopholes potentially in the local ordinances. I do want to say I appreciate the bill has changed dramatically since it was introduced, and I think it's a lot better, but I still think it's got a ways to go before it is able to allow local units of government and citizens to fully protect their communities. On the 60-day clock, two concerns with that. One is that the clock starts ticking by purely administrative actions before the public knows, before elected officials know. So we think any clock that's going to take some rights off the table needs to be tied to the public knowing what's going on. The other issue is, and this has been talked about a little bit already, as if the county is who the permit is submitted to, then it's a while before the township is in the loop. The other thing about the 60-day clock is the public notice dramatically cuts into that 60 days. So the ordinance has to be enacted during that 60 days, including the time it takes to create, publish, and get for the paper to go out. So that can eat up 15 or more days. So one solution to that in terms of fixing the bill would to make the deadline the local unit of government has to reach be the date of the publication of the notice. But the whole idea of public notice is a little problematic with moratoriums because they're emergency measures. They're designed to be enacted when something unforeseen happened. That's how they're referred to in statute. They're also temporary, and so they won't be on the books forever. Any zoning changes that happen during the course of the moratorium that would affect the landowner or anybody, that will be public noticed, and there will be hearings about that. The builders have talked about the concept of a bright line, that they want a point at which they know we can move forward without being subject to a moratorium, and I think we're okay with that concept, but the bright line can't happen before the public and local officials have time to exercise their right to enact a moratorium if that's what's needed in this case. Another thing the bill does, it limits the time counties can do a moratorium to 1 year. And 1 year seems like a long time, but again, go back to this sand frack mining issue. Goodhue County is putting out RFPs to hire experts to advise them, and they're already worried in Goodhue County if they can properly study the issue within a year. So they may need another year, and they may need another year to do it right, and it would be a shame for them to have to rush and get it wrong. Last comment.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Last comment. I think the biggest problem, or one of the biggest problems with this bill, is it's too broad. It applies to all projects, 1,700 plus townships, the 800 plus counties, and all 87 counties. And I just haven't heard, and I've heard testimony over this for 4 or 5 years, a list of problems large enough to warrant that draconian of a change in our ordinances, in our state law. Sorry.
Thank you, Mr. King. Any further questions for Mr. King? Seeing none. Senator Nelson?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I had a question. Actually, I'm for council. I'm wondering if you could read for us the nuisance ordinance, section 561.01. This was an amendment that we added last year in this committee, exempting something that would constitute a nuisance or an adult use or sexually oriented business from falling under this moratoria. And I'm just curious if this nuisance ordinance will answer the issue about silica sand mining.
Ms. Dangle?
Mr. Chair and Senator Nelson, statute section 561.01 reads, anything which is injurious to health or indecent or offensive to the senses or an obstruction to the free use of property so as to interfere with the comfortable enjoyment of life or property is a nuisance.
Thank you, Ms. Dangle.
Oh, thank you. So I'm wondering if maybe, I think Mr. Sulem's in here from the townships. I thought I saw him earlier. I wanted to ask him how this nuisance exemption might address the silica sand issue.
Welcome to the committee. 2 minutes.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Kent Sulem, General Counsel for the Minnesota Association of Townships. My answers will be as short as the questions allow. So, the nuisance statute is certainly a new tool for this bill. It's untested area, but for existence with the silica sand, if a community were to determine that there's excess of dust because of the type of mining or manufacturing going on with the separation of the granite, excessive noise, things like that, we would make the argument that that is a public nuisance. It is untested case law, so it will be up to a court if we're challenged, but it does allow us to make the argument.
Thank you. That answered my question.
You. We'll have a question. It was a tie. We haven't heard from Senator Stephen for a while.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Sulem. So if I'm interpreting what you said, it sounds like this language could be fodder for lawsuits.
Mr. Chair, Senator Stephen.
Mr. Sulem, did you say, is that what you said?
Mr. Chair, Senator Stephen, anytime there's a change in law, somebody may decide to interpret it differently than those of us advising. I can't control what my private sector colleagues do.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I have just one follow-up question.
Sure, Senator Stephen.
Mr. Sulem, do you support the existing statute or this bill? Which one do you prefer, either this new language or the existing statute?
Mr. Chair, Senator Stephen, on behalf of all the associations, we have put out a notice that we think current law is working, but we were charged with the task of trying to develop some process that would improve the bill as introduced, and that's what we have done as requested by the members of the committee. We are not supporting the bill in terms of lobbying for it. We are not lobbying against it. Well, we know current law works, but we were charged with the task, and we did that task.
Thank you, Mr. Zolling. Very well said. Senator McGuire, then we'll move on, I believe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we don't need the bill, but because you were asked to make a bill work, you made something work in the bill. Thank you for that. But I wanted to talk about the nuisance issue. So if it appears as though the activity would actually already – it doesn't keep the activity from being started. The developer or the commercial business gets to come in and do it, and then you get to file a nuisance case. So it doesn't have anything to do with the moratorium. The moratorium would actually stop it from being built. And then it's only after it's being built and after it's up and after it's done the damage that then you can file a nuisance claim. Is that correct?
Ms. Chair, Senator McGuire, the way this is crafted is if the application is for a use that we believe triggers any of the public nuisance statute as was read to you by counsel, we'd have the ability to put a moratorium in place prior to its construction. If it's something that is constructed because we decide not to do a moratorium and to issue the building permits, and then a public nuisance is triggered, there is other law to try to address that public nuisance.
And so if I could just follow up.
Okay. Well, we want to get on to the vote. I think we've this up pretty well. Ms. Senator Vandeveer, do you have any final comments?
Is that a no?
We'd like
I guess
to move
that's
on.
A no.
Senator Bach, and there's another bill here we'd like to get to as well.
I can be very brief. I think this bill it doesn't take away the ability to zone or do any of those things. It does try to strike some balance of fairness between the property owner, and this isn't just for companies. This is if you want to expand your garage or whatever. This would be give you some applicable, I think, more favorable standing to defend yourself and use your property as you see fit without taking away the ability of the cities to control the development that occurs. So would appreciate your support, members.
Thank you, Senator Vandeveer. We're going to move on to the vote.
Mr. Chair, just on before the vote, I think this bill has come a long way from where it started. And one of the things that concerns me about the bill is I think it's the one-size-fits-all factor. And I think there's ways of improving it so that townships and those local units of government that are not as well staffed could be accommodated within the bill. I don't know. One of my questions is where is it going from here? And if maybe we can't see about making some of those improvements so that those communities with less resources have a little more time in order to respond to unforeseen developments. But
thank you, Senator Kielash. It's scheduled to go to the floor. It doesn't have any other committee, but certainly between now and then, perhaps something, if there's some other language, could be worked on. The verbiage around here is they'll get together and they'll talk about it and try to make progress there. So they'll be available to do that. So it'll be a little week or so before it gets to the floor, I imagine.
Mr. Chair, I just have to say that I think we're just letting way too much go to the floor. I just gave a talk to some students today, and they said, what are you doing in committees? I said, committees is where you're supposed to do the work. This is where the work should be done.
Well,
this
Senator
is where
McGuire, I'll
done.
Remind you that last year we spent a couple hours discussing this as well. So,
well, it's a bill that needs a lot of work, Mr. Chair. It needs a lot of work, and we are happy with the changes that
things get to the floor, and that's where they have to go ultimately to be voted on. But thank you for your thoughts. A roll call being requested. The assistant will take the roll.
Vandeveer. Chamberlain.
Yes.
Eaton.
No.
Harrington.
No.
Kielash.
No.
Cruz.
Yes.
Limmer.
Yes.
McGuire.
No.
Nelson.
Yes.
Peterson.
Yes.
Reinert.
No.
Roebling.
Yes.
Sieben.
No.
Wolf.
Yes.
Being 8 yes and 6 no. The motion does prevail. Thank you, Senator Vandeveer. And what call it the next one? Second bill on the agenda is Senate File 2050. Senator Vandeveer.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Stevens.
If it doesn't matter to Senator Vandeveer, perhaps we could hear Senator Bach's bill next, just so he doesn't have to sit here and wait.
I think we'll continue, Mr. Chair. We're trying to move these through, and we did try and encourage some speed on the other bill, but
just a courtesy, I'm suggesting.
It's just a courtesy.
Thank you. It's a quick bill.
I'll remember those courtesies
later. Senator Vandeveer, you have an A3 amendment. A3 amendment.
Sir, yes, Mr. Chair, that's to get the bill in the shape that I'd like it in.
I might have to examine that.
Does everybody have the A3 amendment?
Mm-hmm.
Is it an author's amendment? All in favor? Signify by. Pardon me. Any discussion on the A3 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? No. Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Senator Vandeveer, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for the opportunity to present Senate File 2050 today. It's a local bill exclusively for the Washington County Housing and Redevelopment Authority and is co-authored by the entire Washington County legislative delegation. Before I present the bill, though, I do have an amendment. Be adopted.
Yeah.
A3.
We already did the A3.
Oh, did we?
It was an author's amendment, yeah.
Oh.
Pass flying colors.
I'm on top of it today, Mr. Chair. All right. Would you like to testify?
Yeah. Okay. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Barbara Dacey.
Welcome.
Thank you. I am the executive director for the Washington County Housing and Redevelopment Authority, and I'm here to testify in support of Senate File 2050. The proposed bill is essential to clarify that the Washington County Housing and Redevelopment Authority is indeed a county housing and redevelopment authority under Chapter 469 of Minnesota statute. The impact of the bill is simply to maintain the status quo and to preserve the successful and longstanding relationship between the county HRA and the cities within the county. The Washington County HRA was originally created through special law in 1974 under the Municipal Housing and Redevelopment Statutes. So the proposed changes in Section 1 of the bill simply update the special law to confirm that the Washington County HRA is a county housing and redevelopment authority under Chapter 469. The purpose of Section 2 of the proposed bill is to confirm the HRA's existing practice by clearly stating that the jurisdiction and the area of operation of the county HRA includes all of the areas within the county, including the cities, and in cities where there may be a municipal HRA. 29 out of the 33 cities in the county do not have a municipal HRA, and there are four that do. But we have obtained resolutions from the four that acknowledge and support the county HRA's jurisdiction and area of operation, and I have copies of those available to the committee should you want them. You will also note that the proposed language in the amendment clarifies Section 3 of the proposed bill that requires the county HRA to obtain municipal approval of a project and its location within that particular municipality. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, in closing, the Washington County HRA is merely bringing the special law in line with current practice, and the bill confirms the status quo.
Thank you, Ms. Dacey. So to clarify that one more time, you're bringing it up to date. HRA still exists, still has local townships and cities still have the approval rights, and gets rid of some old, outdated language.
Correct.
Any questions for Ms. Dacey or Senator Stephen?
Well, Mr. Chair, the advocates just raised this issue before that perhaps they were going to testify for, but I'm curious whether council could clarify on the Subdivision 2 of the amendment if that would apply to all HRAs or only to Washington County, because I believe it's the intent of the advocates to just have it apply to Washington County HRA.
Ms. Dangle?
Mr. Chair, Senator Sieben, the way the bill is now, Section 1 that appears in the amendment starting at line 1.3 is in the general HRA law, so the change in that subdivision would apply to all of the HRAs in the state, not just Washington County.
Senator Vandeveer?
Mr. Chair, members, I would ask a question as to why we would have a problem with local approval on projects and location within cities within the state of Minnesota, why that's a problem.
Mr. Chair?
Maybe it isn't.
Senator Sieben?
I don't know if it's a problem. I'm just wondering if other HRAs are aware of the change that you're making and if they support it then.
Senator Vandeveer?
Mr. Chair, Senator Sieben, I haven't heard anyone object to it, and I'm sure a lot of people out there. But.
Senator Sieben?
And Senator Vandeveer, I obviously support the bill as you introduced, but I think now this amendment is broadening the scope to apply to all HRAs and not just Washington County, and I'm not sure that other housing HRAs have had the opportunity to even know that this amendment came forward. Have you notified the other advocates from other HRAs, for instance? Are they aware of this, or do they support it? Like I said, I might. Maybe it's not a problem. I just want to hear from those people then.
Senator Van Vier?
Mr. Chair, Senator Sieben, I have not, but I'm sure this will be out there, and if I hear from them and they have concerns over it, we can try and address it with them, and you can be aware of it. And, but, you know, normally I think this is the way we do it. It's
well, Mr. Chair, normally if you're – I would say that the bill was introduced. It looked like it was specifically for Washington County, and like I said, I support it. But if you're applying it to beyond Washington County, I would think that the other advocacy groups would I'd at least like to get their testimony or hear what they're saying about it.
Senator Sieben, Senator Van Vier, I wonder, too, again, I think what we're talking about here, right, is just the HRA still exists. It just specifically says that the local approval is going to be there for all cities and townships before the HRAs. It's not removing any power or authority or harming the HRAs, correct? I mean, the local approval should be, you know, that's what we were just advocating, right, Senator Sieben? We were just discussing that.
Mr. Chair, if I could,
approval.
You know,
yes, Senator,
I would agree with Senator Sieben, though we should hear from those folks to see if there is some concern that we might have missed. I don't have
sure.
a problem with that. But
okay.
This, you know, and I think that the amendment we've been working on may not have been out there for everyone to see, so I'm not sure if anyone's here to testify for or against that, but I think she is correct in pointing out that we should hear from them.
Anybody here want to testify for or against this particular amendment? What is your wish then, Senator Van Vier?
Well, I would just as soon move this along, and then if there is a big problem, I'm not promising I'll change it, but again, if I don't, the amendment's out there. I don't know what normally we would do. I suppose we could lay it over for
a
day.
And for one day.
You want to
tell our next meeting and then take it up as long as we understood there wouldn't be a lot of testimony. And we would just be dealing with that one issue for getting some feedback on it. I'd be willing to do that if the county doesn't mind.
Is it your desire to lay it on the table?
Yes, Mr. Chair, if that's all right with you. If we're done with other testimony, then.
Does anybody else like to testify for or against this bill? Any other discussion? Motion been made to lay this on the table. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. 2050 has been laid on the table. Thank you, Senator Van Vier. I'll introduce the next bill while you're on your way up here. I got a little thing here to read for you, Senator Reinhart. In honor of Duluth Days at the Capitol, the next bill on today's agenda is Senate File 1625. Senator Bach, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair.
I tried to get you up here earlier,
Mr.
Senator Bach.
Mr. Chair, I'd be remiss if we didn't say Duluth and St. Louis County Days.
Duluth and St. Louis County. Welcome, Senator Bach.
Thank,
I will turn this back over.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Pleased to have Senate File 1625 in the front of the committee. I believe the facility we're going to talk about here is still actually in my district, even after the new maps came out. Senator Reinhart and I share the city of Duluth. He has a much larger share than me. He has even a larger share as a result of redistricting. For decades, I should probably give you a little geography on St. Louis County. It's about 150 miles from north to south, runs from the Canadian border down, including the city of Duluth. For decades, the county has owned and operated two nursing homes in the city of Duluth. And about 10 years ago, they were operating losses. About 10 years ago, they made a decision to close one of them. And did that, and then subsequently sold the real estate to a potential developer. The second one, the Chris Jensen home that this bill is about, operated for a number of years and continued to run at about a $2 million operating deficit to the county. The county made a decision not to close it, but to lease it out to a private operator. That was done in 2009. So there currently is a private operator that runs this 170-bed skilled nursing facility in the city of Duluth. And that developer has an interest in expanding that facility, adding about 110 beds of assisted living space to it, remodeling the existing building to the tune of about $22 to $25 million, adding about 75 new permanent employees there. The situation is they're under a lease with the county, so they've come to an agreement with the county that they would like to purchase the real estate, the building and the land, 22 acres of land. The county does not have authority, because it's county fee land, to negotiate through an appraisal process or whatever process they might, an opportunity for the leaseholder to own the property, because there's a requirement in law that the property is sold at public auction. So what the bill does is gives the county the authority to get out from under the public auction requirement, allows them to go through a negotiated process to then sell the nursing facility and the 22 acres of land at private private sale. So that is all it is. The county's done a very, very good job in finding a private operator of this and taking a $2 million operating deficit off of the county's books. Most county taxpayers are pretty happy about that. So it's been a really success story of transitioning something that used to be run by the private sector or the public sector over to the private sector. And now the private sector is going to turn around and invest some upwards of $20 to $25 million in the facility and add some additional jobs. So, Mr. Chairman, that concludes my thoughts on the bill.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Bach, I think you probably alluded to the thing I'm trying to understand is why is it important that this not be put out for bids? I applaud the fact that we're creating a private sector entity here, but my question is why do we need state legislation to exempt it from going out to bids? What's wrong with a current statute that requires that this would be put out for bids?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Nelson, maybe I'll have John Agar, who represents St. Louis County, speak to that issue. I'm really not aware of what the discussions have been, but I don't know what a public bid process would bring in a price here. I think the best fiduciary outcome for the taxpayer is for the current operator to get appraisals, for the county to get appraisals, and then to make sure that the taxpayers in St. Louis County really get the fair market value out of the facility. It seems unlikely there'd be a second bidder, considering the nursing home is being run by somebody private right now. I mean, could be that existing operator might be able to bid $5 for it, get the whole 22 acre. Nobody else might want it. And that doesn't, I think, make for a very good fiduciary outcome for the taxpayers in the county. But I'd be happy to have Mr. Ungaro.
Senator Reinhart had a question first.
I didn't get an answer to my question yet.
Mr. Chair. I'm just going to add to the conversation. We're not diverting it, Senator Nelson.
Thank you.
Before Mr. Ungaro speaks, the committee should know a couple of things. First of all, the county went to an open bid process in obtaining the current management company. So a pretty good assessment for who was interested in operating a facility like this. I mean, it's a pretty unique facility. And secondly, the county process on this whole thing has been very transparent. I mean, the community knows what's going on. The community knows that the county is leased with a private company. The community knows that the county is looking at selling to a private company. So I mean, we just want to have that information on the table as well.
Would you like Mr. Ungaro to answer your question, Senator Nelson?
Yes, because I'm still trying to figure out why you wouldn't put it out for advertising. And, of course, the company that this agreement has been with would certainly be one to bid.
Mr. Ungaro.
Sure. Mr. Chair and members, John Ungaro, Director of Intergovernmental Relations for St. Louis County. Senator Nelson, in response to your question, as Senator Reinhart alluded to a few years ago, we did go out to bid for this lease, and the company that is currently leasing the facility is the only entity that responded to our RFP to lease the facility. Because they have their foot in the door, are operating the facility, have employment contracts and everything in place, it really is a situation where no one else was interested except this one company. They're there now. They're operating the facility beautifully, and it just is in everyone's best interest to continue making that work. Obviously, as Senator Bach alluded to, we will have to go to an appraisal process to make sure that the value of the buildings and the land are all part of the negotiation. Again, this just authorizes the county to do it. It doesn't mandate that we are going to go forward. We hope that this will facilitate for us to go forward, but it basically sets the table for a good operation to continue.
Okay, Senator Nelson.
Just a couple other questions, if you could bear with me, please. I'm wondering about the fact that it can be tangible and intangible payment, if I understand that correctly. And then the second question has to do with line 1.21. What is the intent of allowing the county attorney to change the land description to implement the intent of St. Louis County? What is that all about?
Mr. Garrow.
Mr. Chair and Senator Nelson, as far as the tangible and intangible property, that is just simply there is a structure there, a nursing home, and there are obviously beds and everything that technically the county still owns because we are leasing the facility. And as far as allowing the county attorney to change the land description, that is the land description that is here is pretty precise, but we want to be able to make sure that if it's those specific 22 acres that we're talking about, that those are maybe more specifically described other than the legal that's here right now. The legal may be more comprehensive than what shows up in statute or in this bill, excuse me.
Thank you.
Senator Kelly.
Just quickly, one of the things that I think is a concern for the county is that if this goes out to open bid, it does not necessarily mean that somebody is going to bid on it because they intend to run the nursing home or this facility. They could be looking to do something like a townhouse development or whatever, correct? And so this allows the city to control, or the county to allow control over that. And that's one question, but the other one is that what does this facility mean to the county as far as the ability for patients to be admitted there, and as far as the percentage or whatever relationship the county has with the current management?
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Kelash, the as far as the county's being able to continue the operation of that facility, that is our primary goal. We want to make sure that the roughly 170 plus skilled nursing beds continue, plus this operator wants to add considerably new independent living beds as well as some assisted living beds. So that is really the ideal campus that you want for a nursing home, where you have independent living beds, assisted living and skilled all in on the same campus. So this really would help facilitate that, and that's why we are particularly interested in. And to your point about someone else that did bid on the facility, yes, they could change their mind after a purchase agreement is signed. There's nothing that's going to be holding them that they have to have a skilled nursing facility on there, so that could put a big hole in the Duluth market. So it is crucial, since that's what the company that's currently operated, it's the only thing they do is nursing homes and assisted living beds, etc. So we're very, very excited to be able to continue the relationship we had over these last 3 years with this company.
Senator Plummer.
Thank you. Sir, couldn't the city restrict a buyer to the purpose of the zoning? Couldn't they just zone the property for this specific purpose and then put it up for bids? And that way the city won't have to worry about losing a facility like this but in the hopes of getting the best possible bid, and the remuneration for that would maximize it for the taxpayers of the community.
Mr. Chair and Senator Limmer, yes, but I think that it's already zoned for this type of activity, so it would require a different type of zoning. But there are, just to give you an idea of what's been happening in this immediate area, for example, with the shortage of dorm space, et cetera, on the UMD campus, there's been a number of student housing developments all within a quarter mile of this immediate area. So it is not far-fetched that someone would come along and wanting to put up student housing on there rather than what is really needed for the Duluth market is for this to continue to be a skilled nursing facility with the additional assisted living and independent living beds that will be part of it.
But, Mr. Chair, and if the property is zoned for a specific purpose, how could that happen? How could it change to a, let's say, as you make reference, a residential placement for students, unless the city of Duluth approved it? And so is there a question on the intent of the Duluth City Council? Are they open to an idea of changing zoning?
Mr. Chair and Senator Limmer, I'm going to let former City Councilor Senator Reinhart answer that question.
Senator Reinhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just, it's a county facility, not a city facility.
All right.
And so the city just did a new comprehensive plan about 5 years ago. And so the zoning in the area is for the appropriate use, but it's not proscriptive to an assisted living nursing facility type of situation. The student housing developments that Mr. Angaro talked about would be an appropriate use in the current zoning as well. So I don't know. My recollection, it's been 3 years removed from the council now, is that we don't have a zoning category narrowly described enough to just allow for that facility.
Mr. Chair, I'm kind of surprised. I never thought that St. Louis County would be shy about using a zoning ordinance to perfect what their city plan would be of making sure that a particular business or a service for the taxpayers was one that would be prioritized. I don't know why they would be bashful about using that, and maybe even using further restriction via the zoning process to do exactly that.
And again, Mr. Chair, it's a county facility in the city of Duluth. So you've got two different levels of government that are in operation. And I mean, Mr. Ungaro is here on behalf of the county.
One wants to sell, and one wants to preserve a service in that area in the same property.
I think that's accurate.
Okay.
So, but you could, Mr. Ungaro, couldn't you do a deed restriction when you sell it without having to go to zoning and to say we want to ensure that we have this here and this is what you're going to use it for? So wouldn't that still give you maybe a competitive bid on it, I think, is what Senator Limmer is trying to get to, or is getting to?
Well, Mr. Chair, technically that's correct, but again, I think for maximum flexibility with this facility and the type of operation that the current lessee is utilizing there, I think that's something which they would probably be somewhat hesitant to enter into just from the standpoint of, say, down the road, even after a substantial investment, if you have a deed restriction that says it can only be used for this, that does somewhat diminish the potential alternative use of that property should, you know, down the road this facility not work out. I mean, that's always a potential, always a risk, but I mean, clearly, in the and a lot of that will have to be left for the negotiation, quite frankly, between the county and the lessee. So none of that has been worked out. Again, this bill is just simply to authorize this to move forward. It's not mandating that this is going to come to fruition.
Okay. Further discussion. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I just have to say I am really uncomfortable taking this out of the ability or the requirement that there be public bids. I just don't see how that would at all undermine this wonderful scenario that you are speaking of, which is preserving this facility and taking it from a public to a private entity. So I just fail to see why it is that you need to be exempt from state law that requires this go out for public bids. And I'm wondering, too, if it has something to do with these two layers. I don't need to know why. I'm just telling you I'm uncomfortable that we're removing that requirement. But it is interesting that we've got two layers of government here, county and city, and we're only hearing from one, unless maybe there is someone from the city here as well.
Mr. Chair and members, we've discussed this with the city. It is, they have had no concerns. They are very supportive of this project. And as to your question about, you know, why the timing, if we went out to bids and everything, the company is very interested in starting construction this year. So if there is a holdup, if we have to go to the full bidding process and everything, that we could lose a construction season. And that's another reason why we want this to move faster rather than a slower process.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I understand kind of why this is happening. Actually, if it has been widely known that this land and the building might be put up for sale, I guess I'd feel comfortable knowing that other interested parties might have been notified. But at the same time, if they don't get any other bidder, mm-hmm. they could sell it for way under what they might get if they negotiate a deal. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, in some ways, they may get the best price by the negotiation. I get that. If the county's committed to, I mean, I know the county sounds very interested in making sure this stays as a nursing home, so they want to make it financially feasible for this business to keep operating there. And so you don't want to see them give them too good of a deal. But at the same time, their local officials are going to be held accountable if they give the building and the land away. And so, again, you know, for kind of thinking about the local control issue, they're the ones who are going to really get the heat if they do it improperly.
Well,
Senator Nelson.
So, I mean, I understand that, but then maybe we don't need this piece in statute if that's the point, that we're always going to hold our locals responsible. We have it in statute that says it's got to be a public bid process, and I'm assuming at some point there was a reason why that was important, if it was to protect taxpayers. I'm not sure. But
Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My comments were along the same lines. I would ask counsel if she knows very many cases where this happens. This is very specific use. Now, it did go out to public bid. I'm all for public bid also. Mm-hmm. But it did go out for public bid, and then they did find a specific user who's now there. And I think if it went out for public bid again, the county would lose money on this, because who's going to bid on that but the person that's there? And they could bid really low, and it wouldn't be as good for the county residents. I don't know, but I am nervous also. I would be nervous if we didn't go to public bid on things, but I think for this specific reason, and they're not expanding it to the state. It's not statewide. It's a very specific case. So I think they've done their due diligence in making sure that it's just very specific to this one case. And it may come up again that other places might do this, but I don't know. We just deal with it then, I guess.
Okay. Further discussion. Senator Reiner.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would just move Senate File 1625 recommended for passage. And is it going to the floor? And to the floor.
Senator Reiner moves Senate File 1625 be recommended to pass and sent to the general and placed on general orders. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Prevails.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman of committee, thank you.
And we'll adjourn.
Nice to get a letter from the city.
Yeah, would have been good. You're okay with this, though, right?
I'm talking, I'm taking Rogers. I'm taking Rogers, but it's definitely
going to be now. Senator Reiner? Do you think the city could provide a letter of support on that?
We love these projects.
Thanks.
Sure.
Get along with the city.
Yeah, they are. I get a lot of email about this bill, about that particular one. And I keep saying, I keep sending them back. I'm not willing to give up my domestic violence safety, some theoretical exercise about, you know, rights.